Okay, welcome to the latest episode of the Rich and Turbo Heavy Half Hour. This is Rich. You can find me on X or Twitter, whatever we call it, as FuzzDoomRip. I'm also a Doom Charts contributor, and I write for Musipedia of Metal, so you can see all my opinions on there. And we have Turbo. Say hello, Turbo.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for listening. You can find me somewhere on X at TurboKaya, Turbo KYA, or at the Rich and Turbo HHH is our, I was going to say website, but that's not it. What is it? Is our
handle?
Handle.
Yeah, there we go.
Twixter.
And Turbo is eternal. He's everywhere as well. So you can find him just about anywhere. We're going to do a little something different today. We are going to do our interview. We have an awesome interview set up. We're also going to go through our future classic song and the Mount Rushmore album that we want to go through, that classic album. But we're going to start with our quarter one of 2024 albums of the quarter. We're going to do 12 and just kind of go back and forth on what that looks like, what we have versus what everybody else had. And I think Turbo and I are pretty aligned this quarter, if I'm not mistaken, but let's just jump right into it. I'll start. I have at number 12, the Carcara album. That is some super French acid psych kraut rock awesomeness. It surprised me how much I liked it. It came in pretty late in the quarter, but after a couple of listens, that was pretty much an immediate buy for me. I was drawn in by kind of I dig stoner kraut rock kind of overlap stuff. So I think that's where it got me. And it was really infectious, and the psych sound of it, psych side of it got to me as well. So I really dig that, the new Carcara.
It is a great album, but I thought it was from the second quarter album. Dang.
Wait, well, oh shit, you're right. No, wait, when did that come out? That came out
in March. It came out late March, but for some reason my brain was saying it was a second quarter album, but...
It could still be for you, but it's my number 12 for quarter one.
I don't hold to any constraints on what time exists as.
I mean, you could also be the guy who only puts stuff on lists when they get it as a physical media, but that's a whole other story.
That's true. I probably didn't get it until April, so yeah. That counts.
What do you got for 12, Turbo?
Number 12 is going to be Emergency Rule. The album, The King of Ithaca, out of Australia. It's a boogie southern hard rock, heavy rock, probably more on the edge side of that. It's a really great album that kind of surprised me as a fresh band that I wasn't aware of that came out this year.
Yeah, I think you'll be seeing that a little bit later on somebody else's list, if I'm not mistaken. So I really dig that one too, but we'll get back to that. So I was surprised by that record too. It's killer. One of the better stoner records that I've heard this year. Let's go into my number 11. I'm guessing this might wind up being on your list as well, but I'm looking at the latest, again, we're going to stay in Australia, but we're going to go with the Neptune Power Federation record, their latest album that just kind of blew me away. And what I see with them is they kind of always seem to be like a different kind of theme or leverage like a different kind of style for their records. And maybe I'm imagining that, but I feel like that's what they do. And you know, for this one, I heard a lot of like 80s. Like somebody, I saw somebody mention like the Metal Go-Go's. I think I called them like, you know, like Pat Benatar if she worships Satan, something like that. but I love her voice. I love kind of their different kind of ways that they kind of thematically build their records, and I found that one. Killer. I'll be listening to that one throughout this year.
I agree. And you're right. That will probably show up later. But yeah, it's a very solid album. It's a great band. They put out 3, 4 solid albums in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I've never been disappointed by anything they put out, and I know some people were didn't love the way their last album closed with the kind of meatloafy
Oh
final
yeah.
song, but I love that. Like I thought that was great.
And I hear they put on great shows too. I'd like to see them live.
I can only imagine. Yeah, I follow them on Instagram and see some of the reels that they put on there, and it looks like so much fun. Cool. All right. So that was my 11. Good Night, My Children by Neptune Power Federation. What do you got for yours?
For my 11, it is our favorite elusive band from Montreal, Hazehound, with Macrodose. Fuzzy garage rock. They're just heavy, fuzzy, it's wild. There's not much about this band that you can find online that I've been able to find online. And I want to know what their love for David Allan Cole is, since they put his snippets throughout the album on. So.
I too love this record, and you will also hear this from me when I talk about this one at some point in my top 12. I do have an email address for them, Turbo, so we're gonna have
Nice.
to send them something because I reached out to them to see if they could send us some codes for Doom Charts, and he did respond to me. So I'll send that to you later. Let's see if we can get them on and they can start explaining what the hell is going on with that.
Did he respond in English or French?
It was English, so I could understand what was going on. It worked out perfectly for me. Cool. More on that one very soon. I think again, I think we're pretty aligned with a lot of what we're going to be talking about. Let's go to my 10, which is the debut album from Goat Major, Ritual on Ripple Music. Really cool doom elements of some proto in there. I thought this was killer, probably my doom record of the quarter, if you're gonna look at it that way. Ripple not only puts out, some of the best known bands, but Todd has an ear to find some of these new bands and put out debut records that are just killer. I heard the first EP of the Goat Major that put Goat Major put out had 3 of the songs that are on Ritual, and just killer. Really, really good, really, really heavy, but really, really well produced also. So Goat Major is my number 10, and probably my doom record of the quarter. What's your 10, Turbo?
That's a great album that hasn't gotten much attention from me, which I'm sorry to hear. I'm
Yeah,
sorry to say that,
I have to change
because
that soon.
I was looking at Mountains of Madness, that song on there. I guess I wonder if that's an H.P. Lovecraft themed song.
Another band would have to try to get on the show to explain themselves.
Number 10 for me is a band out of Chicago called Horse God with their album Giraffatron. This is more of a heavy proggy stoner rock that's usually, I don't know, I don't usually get into prog as much as other people do, but when it's psychedelic and heavy and not as drawn out,
Short prog.
yeah.
That's a good record. I didn't have it on my list. I had it in my monthly list, but it's definitely a less straight ahead, more difficult listen than some of the other things that we might have on our lists, I would say.
Yeah, this one was the first album I got into at the beginning of the year. It came out on January 5th. But yeah, it's surprising. Check out the song Thunder Snow or Giraffatron. They're both worth checking out.
Excellent song titles too. All right, very cool. Let's head into 9. You've already mentioned this one, but 9 was for me Hazehound. Love that record, love the fuzziness of it. Gives me like a not necessarily the sound of his voice, but like the production and the drums and the guitar sound, like a Jimi Hendrix experience vibe in like 2024 Canadian version. But I love the Hazehound record. That should wind up somewhere in my top 50 of the year, no doubt. And I think it's moved up. I think I had this, I'm not even sure I had this on my initial top 10 in my quarterly list, but love it, and it continues to grow on me. So,
All right. Yeah, it's a grower. The more you get into it, the better it gets. So,
absolutely. Very cool. What's your nine?
and number nine is from my last week's Future Classic song, Max Boogie Overdrive, their album Stoned Again. They're out of LA. And this is just pure classic stoner rock, you know, heavy, hard written, heavy, hard driven rock. It's killer. It's another surprise of the year and first great killer album of the year so far to me. You know, it fits all the things that I look for in stoner rock or heavy rock or whatever we want to call it. But it's, you know, essentially a great party rock album.
Yeah, well, I agree 100%. Again, another one we'll be seeing on here, and I think I had this promo like 4 months before it came out, and I listened to it a couple of times and ignored it for like until like 3 weeks before it came out, and then I started screaming about it because it's a killer album, and you'll be hearing that from me too.
It's one of those you look at the album cover and you're like, oh, another one of those cheesy,
Yeah.
jokey stoner bands, you
Yeah,
know.
weed
Nobody wants to take,
worshiping. Yeah,
yeah.
no, yeah.
They maybe have one or two good songs, but no, this is full on worth listening to every song. It kicks ass.
Very cool. And like I said, we have a lot of overlap, which is very cool. Which should doubly get you guys to go listen to these records that we're talking about. Along the same lines of that, you had Emergency Rule on there earlier. I also have The King of Ithaca by Emergency Rule. It's my number eight. And I think you covered everything that we need to say here. I think it's kind of interesting that I have three Australian bands in my top 12 for the quarter. I think I've mentioned two of the three so far, but a lot of cool stuff coming out from Down Under. So, yeah, Emergency Rule, killer record. Can't say much more than what Turbo said about it. Let's keep going with your number eight.
Oh, the Godfathers of Doom, the Obsessed, Gilded Sorrow. This is another, it's a beautiful album. Heavy. It's one of the probably the best thing they've done in a while. It gets better every time I listen to it. It's, you know, if you like the Obsessed, you know what it is.
It was my number 13. I'm looking at my list right now. So it just missed mine, but I agree. The sound of it, the production of that record stands out to me. Like it's the best sounding, I think, record that they've ever done. And Wino sounds great, and the guitar is great. And just, yeah, I agree. Cool. Anything else you want to say about the Obsessed? I know Todd was super pumped to have Wino and crew on his label when we talked to him.
No, not really. I mean, you can't really. I don't know how I could turn anybody onto it that already knows about it, and I don't know how to turn anybody onto it that doesn't know about it, other than you should listen to
Yes.
it.
That and All Obsessed, I think, would be if you don't know them, check them out.
Why
So.
are you listening to us?
Yeah, that is a very good question. And if you're here to learn, here's your first lesson. Go listen to The Obsessed, all of
Right.
it. Cool. All right, onward. Number seven. I have a feeling number seven is going to be on your list too. It was our album of the week last episode, and that's the Iota record. You know, I don't think we need to talk too much more about how awesome it is. And to me, it's like almost like psychedelic, like space shoegaze stoner, beautiful rock. I just love that album, and it's another grower. I think it initially, like when I first put it on, and the first time I listened to it was actually the record that I got, and I was stunned. I kind of stopped and just kind of listened while where I was, and then I don't want to say I ignored it after that, but there's so many records that come and albums that come out. And then, but once we got back to knowing that we were going to have that as our classic or as our album of the week, I started to dive back in and whoa, it's just killer. And it doesn't sound like anything else that's on my list. I can say that for sure. So the Iota record is pretty killer.
Yeah, it's worth giving a listen to. It's more of a laid back. It comes across as laid back, but it's still heavy. It's still more in depth than you would, take it for, if that makes any sense. But
yeah, no, it's deep. Yeah, I get it. It's totally, it's deep. There's a lot going on, a lot of layers. Cool. All right. I think we're up to your number seven.
yeah, out of Cologne, Germany. I don't know if this is how you pronounce the band's name. Daver, Daevar. This is their second album, Amber Eyes, and it's classic doom. It's another surprise album. Just, it's got haunting vocals. It's got this whole feel to it that just, I don't know, it grabs a hold of me. It fits. It's like it's a little piece of the puzzle. It just fits. And it's one of those that I can listen to over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's a great record. I enjoy it. Didn't make my list, but I made my my March list because it's really good. And it's like understated in some ways. I don't know how to really put words around it, but like it's like heavily understated in like the
Right.
best way possible. I'm not really sure if I'm getting my point across here, but it's really good.
Yeah, I guess what you're saying is kind of something that sneaks up on you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I knew it was coming and then, I didn't get to it right away. And then I'm like, oh, wow, I need to go listen to that. And yeah, I have a feeling that one might be a grower for on me too. And you might see that when we start going to the, top 12 of the first half of the year. So we'll see.
Yeah. It's got some great songwriting on it, so. And
Yeah.
then it's one of the tags that's used on it that I don't agree with because I don't like this word at all, and I don't like to use it. It's called grunge.
Out of all the albums to call grunge, I'm not sure that would be one of them.
Right.
I think my number six might have a little bit of grunge to it, which is a perfect entryway into my number six, which again I think is going to be on your list, but we'll see. Would be the record, the Sundrifter record, an earlier time, back to back Small Stone albums here. I think it might this record might get a little under the grunge category, mostly because there's a little bit of Soundgarden-y stuff going on there, especially in the voice, right?
Yeah.
But there's a lot more to this record. I think it's more of like a I would call it more like a spacey grunge, or it definitely is like some heavy atmosphere going on with the heavy rock that's underneath it. And the songwriting on this is amazing. The playing is on it is amazing. And Small Stone doesn't put out a lot, but whatever they put out is killer, and this is right at the top of the stuff that they've ever put out, in my opinion, which is a pretty bold statement, but I think
Yeah,
it's
and
true.
I mean, this is a killer album that's reached across many, because a lot of the people that we know that like different styles of music, this is kind of got their attention too,
Yeah.
So if you don't know, no matter what you like, the Sundrifter is probably something you would really enjoy. So for my number six,
Yep.
are you there?
I'm here, number six.
All right. The Quill, this band has been around a long time, and I've been trying to push them, get people interested in them, and sometimes it's hit or miss. They're out of Sweden, heavy stoner rock. The album's called Will of Illusion. And this is probably one of the better albums they've had. It's the most complete album they've had in a while. This has got a great sound to it as well. And it was, I don't know, did it have my Oh, we didn't do the first on our first episode, we didn't do the classic.
Yeah, we didn't hit the classic song. And we're really going for the professional sound on this as I drop a ton of stuff around my office right now. So we'll see what winds up in editing later on, as also my headset power is dying too. So we here at the Rich and Turbo Hard and Heavy Half Hour are nothing if we're not super professional in how we're doing this. So I did love the Quill album. I thought it was really great. I thought it was their I want to say like the most Sabbathy record that they've done in a while. Maybe I'm crazy there, but they to me would be what rock radio should be,
Right,
if that makes any sense.
definitely. Oh yeah, definitely. So, I know I could pick three or four songs off of this album that should be on the radio. It should be hits. One of my favorite songs of the year so far is their song "Elephant Head." It's got a cool groove to it, nice riff.
A lot of the songs that are your songs of the week and the ones you're mentioning have some kind of animal theme. You need to investigate that in a future episode,
Well, animal was my nickname in sixth grade.
that is not a surprising comment at all, Turbo. Not a surprising comment at all. Excellent. I'm into number five now that I have my headset situation taken care of. Note to self, don't wear headsets that need to be charged or charge them before you actually do a podcast. So my number five, Max Boogie Overdrive. I mentioned this one earlier, had a little bit higher up on my list. Stoned Again, killer album, not your typical album you'd expect that's called Stoned Again. Not just a straight ahead party stoner weed worship record. A lot going on this album. So love the Max Boogie Overdrive record. Got that at my number five. Where are you at, Turbo, with your number five?
The Iota album,
Okay.
Pentasomnia. I refer the to this album as more of a cosmic desert sound.
Love that.
Like I said, that I really would like to know what they're talking about, because each song is supposed to represent a dream of some sort. Because I laid down, was half asleep listening to this, and that was when I came up with my idea of wandering around the desert and finding a spaceship, flying that spaceship and crashing it, and then just kind of walking off into the sunset. That's how I feel when I listen to this whole album.
And when an album can do that to you, that's a pretty powerful thing. That's
Right.
very cool. Awesome. Yeah, we if you learn nothing from our last two episodes, we love the Iota record. Cool. All right, into the top four, the third of my three Australian bands. This is the record from Full Tone Generator, Refuge of Sinners. Straight ahead, I call it stoner. It's really hard rock. They have elements of punk, like a punk attitude in there as well. You can throw some grunge in there. Really great songwriting, really deep songwriting as well. There's some pretty crazy stuff going on in some of the lyrics. But that Australian scene, I'm minimizing the fact that it's a continent, and that Emergency Rule and Neptune Power and Full Tone Generator probably don't live next door to each other. But as a stupid American, I will say that the Australian scene, at least from what I can hear on the heavy rock side, has really hit it out of the park in quarter one of 2024. So Full Tone Generator, my fourth record of the quarter. Where are you at now, Turbo, with your four?
Well, staying on the continent would be the Neptune Power Federation. Good night, my children.
There it is. I knew it would be there.
That heavy psych. It's got a great, you say 80s feel. I say 70s feel.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe a
Okay.
late, maybe say, let's say late 70s, early 80s feel. You get the whole new wave, but it doesn't really have a new wave sound to it. But
There's like new
I
wave
thought it,
vibes to it, though, right? It's,
yeah,
you know what I
because I
mean?
know that there's one song that reminds me of the Cars,
Well,
sort
The
of.
Lie, probably. I think that might be the one you're talking about. Yeah.
But yeah, it's oh, and Cheap Trick. There was another song that had that Cheap Trick feel to it. But yeah, that's just a, don't know what else to say about it other than what
Yeah,
we've said. It's a great band.
agree. I think I have to thank you. I think you turned me on to this band like 3 or 4 years ago. The album before the one with the meatloaf vibes to the last song. So you
Oh yeah,
have turned me on to this band, so.
that one is killer. The Rat Queen.
Yep. Oh.
That is
Yeah.
one killer album. Memoirs of a Rat Queen.
Great
That's like
band.
a whole concept album. It just kicks ass.
Awesome. All right. We're heading into
Where
our
are we?
top three. Top three. One very relevant to our guest from last week. We have I have the Big Scenic Nowhere album, The Way Down. Talked a lot about that with Tony Reed last week, just in regards to how that album was recorded, how leveraging the guys in Yawning Man and how they all came together and how the vocals came together and how if he was intimidated to sing Sarah Smile, which I certainly would be even if I did have a good voice, but talk about desert and atmosphere and spacey and stuff like that. The Big Scenic Nowhere record, different vibes than Iota, but same kind of out in the desert atmosphere,
Yeah, I would
roaring
say
around, tripping, whatnot.
more
So,
atmospheric. Atmospheric is a word,
yeah. As
right?
far as I know, yeah. I
Sounds
write it
good.
all the time in reviews, so it better be a word at some point.
All right, it's a word.
All right, cool. Call the dictionary people. Cool. What else? What do you got for three?
Sundrifter, an earlier time. I hate to be negative about anything, but I don't really like Boston.
The
But
city or the band? The city or the band?
they have released some great bands. Yeah, I have no, I don't know anything about the city other than what people say. I'm sure they hate me too.
Boston loves you, Turbo. I don't know what you're talking
But
about.
yeah, just check this album out because it should grab you.
Excellent. So my
Are
number
you
two.
got lost there for a second?
Oh, no problem. I'm heading to my number two, which I don't think you have either spent too much time with or didn't grab you. But for and I think you said it sounded like Bush, and I wasn't so sure if that was a compliment or not. So people who are listening to this, in my opinion, this sounds nothing like Bush. But the Tangled Horns album, Lighter, is my number two. When I did my, I think this came out in it was either January or February. Whenever I did my list, I think it might have been January. This album was on my list, but it was like in the 20s or something like that. And then all of a sudden, it just like I just got it. It clicked with me. And yeah, there is some 90s love on there for sure, but there's more than that. There's like this. Almost like this like English punk kind of attitude to this band, but not necessarily musically, but like from an attitude standpoint. But yeah, it has 90s love, heavy alt metal 90s love, very melodic. It's got the grunge sound. If you like that 90s grunge stuff, you're gonna like this, but a little bit more to it than that. Some twists and turns, and tangles to use their name of the band. But I haven't seen a ton of love for this album, but for me, the Tangled Horns Lighter record is next level awesome. And it will be one of the albums for 2024 that stays with me, that will be in kind of constant rotation because I just can't get enough of it. The album cover freaks me out. It's these like weird baby dolls with taped mouths and eyes closed that I'm looking at right now, and it's freaking me out. But musically, that record is awesome, and I would highly recommend it.
I will say I do like the first two songs on that album.
Okay, we're making progress then.
Yeah, it will slowly, step by step, I'll get into it.
Cool. What do you got for
Anyway,
two?
Langfinger. So now you say it, Langfinger. Their album Pendulum out of Gothenburg, Sweden. This is just straight up heavy rock, man. Another band. Well, they haven't released one since 2016, I think, 2018. So this is I think their second full length album.
Yeah, I
And it
believe
was
you're
going
correct.
to be The song Cycles was my future classic song 1 week.
Yeah, I preempted you on that, unfortunately, because I was having editing issues. But yeah, that's a great album. I think I didn't know about that band until Bucky from Doomcharts mentioned it, and listened to a couple of singles and ordered it and thought it was yeah, I think it's killer too. It's a really good album. Didn't make my top 12, but it was if I'm looking at my list, it's in the top 20 for the quarter. So really good stuff.
Yeah, it's a solid rock album, just basically. If you're looking for rock, hard rock, heavy rock, that's it.
Absolutely. Cool. All right. Drum
So we
roll.
both,
Number one. I have a feeling that
the,
we agree here.
yeah, probably no surprise.
Yeah. So if you've heard this before, we've talked about this record. We've talked to Tony Reid about his mixing and work he did on this record, but it's Kitsa, Dead by Dawn, which I feel like it's going to be tough to get this out of the number one spot for the year. The only thing that I say about this album is that it's too short, but every song is killer. I could listen to it back to front, over and over again. Every time I listen to it, it's a new song that's my favorite. It's catchy. The lyrics are amazing. I say shit rolls downhill now in my everyday life more often because of them. It's just a record that I think will be something that is extremely memorable that comes out. And rumor has it, don't want to drop any tea here, but rumor has it there's a really killer label who's picking them up for their next album. So that's all I'm saying. But the Kitsa album is far and away my number one for 2024 quarter one. Turbo, anything to add to that? Because I'm pretty sure you feel very similarly.
Yeah, the same thing. That's my number one as well. It's just a full sounding album. And like I said before, it's soulful. It's just got a full, to me, it's just got this full soulful sound to it. Not that it sounds anything like soul music, but it's just, you can feel it, you
Yeah.
know, you can feel that these guys have put their self into it heavily. You know, I think what did Tony say? This is something they've worked on for quite a while.
Yeah, and it was fascinating hearing like how he worked with the different instruments and with the different players to get them like to where he thought would be like the optimal place for that record. It was fascinating in our talk yesterday or last week.
Considering how much he's into soul and pop and all that, that kind of makes sense on how his album sounds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though for people like us that are into heavy music, you probably don't think that we would use those terms. You know, it's not something you want to associate with heavy music, probably, but
Extremely relevant here.
yeah, doesn't bother me. I can
No.
listen to some stuff that's not part of the same genre that can still be as heavy as hell.
I'm pretty sure you gave me a Parliament playlist to listen to too. So,
Did I?
I know you can go in all sorts of different directions. Yeah, that or I asked you for one because you were listening to that. So,
You're probably I'm behind because I know I was going to supposed to do a Motown list for you. I did a couple of blues lists that I'd
yep.
like to revise. So yeah, that's probably something we need to talk about some other time.
Awesome. Well, it's very cool that we agree on the number one. We had a lot of overlap, but I think Kitson will be near the top for us when we do this half list and end of year list, etc. So go support the heavy music underground, buy these albums, digital, physical media, whatever it is, go see them live. Because they rely on us to keep going. And these are our favorites. Love to hear in the comments about some of your favorites that maybe we missed. So all right, let's transition,
Awesome.
Turbo. What do you
Well,
think?
real quick,
Oh yeah.
I had three albums from December of 2023 that because they were so late, they didn't really get much attention.
Tell
So I
me.
want to give these bands some attention real quick. Heavy Katana out of Tokyo. They call themselves Samurai Doom. This is their third album. I've been into them since their first, and I think this is they've really grown. I think this is a very well-written album. So yeah, Heavy Katana. I think that's how you pronounce it. I mean, the Heavy, Hebi Katana out of Tokyo. Another band out of Australia, Fuzz Toads. The album's called Small Business. They're more of a garage stoner rock band. So I think it was just a little EP that they put out, but it's you know, if you like fuzzy, heavy, garagey sound stuff, that's good. And then Dune Pilot, they released at the beginning of December, bang, album called Magnetic. They're out of Munich. It's just straight up desert rock sound, and that's a killer. I think their second or third album. It's a really killer, and it's too bad that those albums got released in December at the end of the year when most people aren't paying attention.
Yeah. Don't they think about our lists when they're putting albums out?
Yeah,
I don't
think about
understand
us.
it. Very cool, Turbo. I learn a good chunk about music, what's good, what's cool, from Turbo, and have learned a lot from him since he and I connected on Twitter, probably about 4 years ago now. So I give him a lot of the credit for a lot of the bands that I'm into now. So we'll be forever grateful for you there, Turbo. So
Thank you.
thank you for that.
My pleasure. I love to
Awesome.
introduce people to music.
And you do an amazing job on it, which is why this is such a great outlet for you, and why this is a good transition to your future classic song of the week. Tell us another song that we need to pay attention to that is going to be for the ages that we might not even know yet.
The Lunar Effect. Off their last, the latest album, Sounds of Green and Blue, the song Flowers for Teeth. That is a killer song. It's a classic song, I guess I should say, since it's a future classic song. So check that out. That's an album that will definitely be talked about in the second quarter. The Lunar Effect, Sounds of Green and Blue. And that should we'll have that on our the band. Ha, what are we? The show's Twitter X page. Thank you.
That is a really, really good album. And I have a feeling it's gonna right the second it's lurking around the top of my April list. Not quite at the top. There's a lot of good records that have come out in April, but it's right there. I could spend a whole episode on my love for the new Tarot record, but I don't want to get into it with you today, Turbo. So so we'll save that
I
for another
did like the
episode.
last song on that album, though.
We could have a whole episode on my love and Turbo's opinions on the new Tarot record, and maybe we'll do that next time, because I will we're gonna have a discussion about what the album of the week is next episode. Cool, yeah. So check out that Lunar Effect. That's a great song. Love the title of that song, and it's a great album too. So go ahead and check that one out too. The other feature we want to cover here before we get into our interview, which we're super excited about with Dave Angstrom from Hermano and lots of other bands. Let's talk about the classic record of the week. Is one that I'm not as familiar with as you are. I definitely have heard it. I definitely dig it, but it's something that you brought up, and I thought it was a great idea. Let's jump into the classic album.
Kingdom Come by Sir Lord Baltimore.
You got that perfect, by the way. You were worried,
Awesome.
but you got that
Yeah.
perfect.
This is a, I don't know, different opinions on what people want to consider the first heavy metal album. This is one of the first albums that got considered heavy metal back in the 70s. This came out late 1970, so it's behind a couple of bands like Led Zeppelin or Black Sabbath or Deep Purple. So but it's, I still think it's as relevant. I mean, they're called the Godfathers of Stoner Metal by somebody, but it's heavy, fuzzy distortion.
Weird too.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the first albums that started doing something before, and that's multi-tracking before they started doing it back in like the mid to late 70s. And that they were, and this is kind of one of those things, they were kind of found by Mike Apple, the guy who's manages Bruce Springsteen nowadays.
Interesting.
So they were basically just some teenagers that put a band together. They had like four tracks, and found a ad in the paper about somebody wanting to record. If you got some music, we'll record it or something like that. And that's who they go and they find. And this guy, it's one of the first things I think he did, helps them create their sound. He actually gave them their name, Sir Lord Baltimore, which is from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, something that they said to each other. It's been a while since I've seen that movie, but yeah, the singer is the drummer, and he's just, it's just all out. It's like it's got one speed. It's all heavy. It's all fast and heavy and loud, and he's like, think he says he tore up so many pedals and cymbals, and just they were just wild. That like one of their first as a band, one of their first shows was Carnegie Hall,
Oh, wow.
and then
That's
the second was like the Fillmore East. They had to stay there. They did open for Sabbath for a little while, but yeah, he said that he blew his voice out by singing so loud and so heavy, and then the sound they had was just really, it's like he blacked out from singing and playing so hard that he forgot where he was.
That's crazy. That's what I get out of the record is it's really fast, and it's really ahead of its time for 1970. We talked about the Blue Cheer record and how that was ahead of its time. I think this one too. And it, yeah, I know it, Pioneer and Stoner Rock, but like there's more to it. Like not just Stoner Rock, but like they were. I'm trying to think, like, heavy in like a sense of heavy that I don't think really existed then, a different type of heavy.
Right. They
So.
covered, it wasn't just, they had kind of had a punk sound, a Baroque sound,
Yeah.
metal. So it's more than just, one flat, straight album sound, Like today's metal bands, it seems like they all just have one sound in it and their whole album sounds exactly the same,
Yeah.
It's like there's got to be some variety in there. You got to
Yeah.
break it up, mix it up a little
Very cool. So yeah, check out Kingdom Come by Sir Lord Baltimore, another one of our Mount Rushmore of albums that created the genres that we love today around heavy rock, stoner, doom, desert, all that stuff. So we'll debate about how many heads go on Mount Rushmore again in another episode. But what we're gonna do right now is transition to our interview that we're super excited about. We love the band Hermano, and we're super pumped that Hermano is back and potentially recording. We're gonna find out about that now. But we're gonna talk to Dave Angstrom, who's the guitarist from Hermano and many other projects. So let's jump right into that now, Turbo. How about it?
Sounds good.
All right, let's do it. All right, so we're back. Super excited to have Dave Angstrom from many bands, including Hermano, and including Lunasoul. And really excited to hear about what's going on today. Some stories from back in the day, and just anything that he's really interested to talk about. And if you have not checked out Hermano or any of Dave's other bands, you need to go do that immediately. So Dave, how you doing? Great to have you.
Oh man, great, great, great. Yeah, thanks for including me in this. It's very cool. I love what you guys are doing for the scene and getting the word out about some really cool bands. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank
Awesome.
you. I think the first question, for anybody who doesn't know, kind of your background and some of your bands and some of your material and what you're up to, can you give us maybe just a couple minute overview so we can educate some of the folks who might not know?
Yeah. When I was in Boyz II Men, when that band broke up, I grew up in Southern Kentucky, a small town called Glasgow. Very, very cool scene. There's something in the water down in that area, and there's massive players. So I was begging for a guitar at a young age. I was just absolutely obsessed with Kiss, and got in trouble in fourth grade for creating a Peter Criss band called Criss Kids. And I was just way into that whole thing, just kind of comic booky and otherworldly to me. But I love the darkness and the heaviness of some of their riffs. Looking back and hearing it now, it's like, okay, it's not really. But when I was a kid, I was like, it's so heavy. So I kind of was way into that. And at 10, my parents were like, look, we'll rent a guitar for 3 weeks. And I just went nuts and just played and played and played. And by 11, I was teaching at the store. So there's a one little shop called Backstage Music, and it was amazing. Like Sam Bush would hang out there, Greg Martin from all the guys from the Headhunters. They were actually signed to Swan Song, Zeppelin's label at the time. They were Itchy Brother, and they were heavy as hell and just amazing, amazing musicians and people, just amazing people. And they really kind of took us under their wing. So David Barrick, we grew up as kids. We met in sixth grade, John McGee, and we started what became Black Cat Bone. That's how I met Johnny and how we ended up, being friends with Caius and kind of getting down this path together. But as kids, we were way into music, and we would just hang out at the music store literally every day. They would ask us to play. They had a turntable on the front counter. They'd sat around and drank moonshine and played fiddle and banjos. I grew up watching bluegrass players and then watching, rock guys and being like, huh, bluegrass is a lot harder. Like, gonna do rock. I can handle that. So it was really cool. I remember as a kid, like they were like, bring a record that you like, and these are probably, 30-year-olds at the time. They seemed ancient to us and just, otherworldly again. And they were like, bring a record in. So I brought in Kiss, and they the first album. And they ended up like kind of chuckling. They're like, dude, no. If you're gonna listen to rock, and they put on Johnny Winter and I just immediately was like, holy smokes, that's what I want to do. So I became a massive Hendrix, Johnny Winter, kind of cream growing up in that as a young kid. So we were always just in bands. That's what we did. We couldn't play sports worth a crap. We could play music. We loved music. We all connected. I mean, I remember sitting over at David Barrick's parents' house and making light shows when we were 12, blowing the circuit breakers because we didn't know how to wire things. And, we were just way into that whole thing as kids. And David really went down the recording path as we got older and into college. And as we were starting to get signed and a lot of interest early on for that band, he was like, I'm gonna go just record. So he's always recorded us and done really well. And David helped, break like Blackstone Cherry and a lot of other bands. He's massive at what he does. He did the Hermano remix for us. So we've known each other since we were 10 years old. So it's pretty funny to be our age now, being like, we're still making music. Like, remember when we almost blew your parents' garage up? So there's, for
That's
me,
great.
it's always been about that, like friendships, camaraderie. I've been in bands where they kind of dissolve and you kind of lose friendships, and I just hate that, man. And it's one of the reasons we made Hermano, gave it the name Hermano. We're brothers, and John and I became friends when we were label mates. I'll never forget, I was in LA, and Dave Resnick, the A&R guy, was just like, we were sitting in this convertible Mustang, and they're trying to wow me. They're like, what kind of drugs? What kind of women do you want? I'm like, buy me guitar, like Les Pauls. That's what I like. Like, I can get my own cheap beer. Like, I want Les Pauls. And so we kind of became friends, you know. He was our A&R guy, and he was a cool guy. And he was just like, dude, I think you really need to hear this band. So he put on Caius, Thong Song, and I was just
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I loved it. I didn't know what the rest of their stuff sounded like, but I heard Johnny's voice. I was like, he's freaking hilarious to the point. Like, I love everything about that guy's voice. And he was like, well, he likes your voice and he wants to meet. So we ended up swapping numbers and just kind of became friends, you know, through the telephone around touring and stuff. And then ultimately I had we'd been dropped with Black Cat Bone, and I started a band that I wanted to go back to being 10 years old again. You know, like, I just want to be in a rock band. Like, I don't want drama. I don't want, you know, all these egos, although I probably have a massive ego. But I was like, you know, how do we keep everything cool with everybody? So I just reached out to some friends and started a band, Super Fuzz, and called John and was just like, hey, I'm doing this band. Do you want to sing on a track? And he said, yeah, of course I'd love to, you know. And then Steve Brown, I'd met him through my friend Steve Earle, who was in the Afghan Whigs. And Steve Brown was like, hey, and Steve is also the first drummer on Hermano, Only a Suggestion. So all these worlds started kind of as they do, you know, with any friendship, you know, you meet people and different doors open, different chapters, and try to be cool, try to be a good person, and walk away, you know, as new doors open with more friends. So what I found was, as we were making that record, all of a sudden Steve Brown, he was producing that record for us up in Cincinnati, and we were in Lexington, and that was a big deal for us. We're like, oh man, we're going to Cincinnati, you know, like, we made it.
Big
And
city.
I'd already toured like with Skinner and all these other bands at that point, but it's still like, we're going to Cincinnati, you know, like, this is gonna rock. And Steve's really great. He's a great songwriter and a good producer and just a good dude. So we became friends. And during that session, he was like, he kind of got the hair like, ah, I need to put John, because Steve plays bass. And he was just like, I need to put John and me and Dave in a band, like in the same room. So ultimately, he got Steve Earle into the idea. And then he called John and said, Dave and I are going to do this band and he wants you to sing. And John's like, hell yeah. And he called me and said, hey, John and I are going to do this band. We want you to play guitar. And I was like, well, hell yeah. And I never called John. He never called me. Like, we both got duped. But at the end of the day, we're really grateful. It's been, you know, like, I don't know, 25 years or something at this point. So we started Hermano, started tossing some songs around, went into Cincinnati, and started recrafting those songs, and met Mike Callahan. He had actually played with Disengage one night, and Steve saw them and was like, dude, you're gonna love this guy. And I mean, the first day I met Mike was the first day that we started like writing, getting ready for pre-production. And we've been, I mean, best friends since. So it's been a really cool, I think, journey so far musically. And then, you know, my kids are both into music and doing their thing. And it's just like, I feel like the next generation's lining up with other friends. And I love music, and the path that I've been on, it's really about multiple bands, definitely, because I hear tons of riffs in my head, as you can tell, probably just the way I speak. There's a lot going on in my brain all the time, a lot of high energy. So I just kind of keep popping around and trying to have fun and play a riff that makes me smile, you know, a riff that makes me
Right.
smile or want to grit my teeth. I'm all about that.
That's awesome.
That's yeah.
I
We have time for
underestimated
one more question, right?
that.
Yeah.
I think I underestimated the love for that first Hermano record, like until it got reintroduced to the world. Like the reaction of everybody to the repressing of Only a Suggestion was, it blew me away. Like to me, that's what people were talking about for weeks afterwards, as if this was a new album. And I think to some people it was. Like I don't I think there's like a ripple kind of pushed it to that somewhat of a new audience. And it's killer. I guess my one question would be, how did you guys decide to, I guess, come back together and start this this re-release process? And Todd kind of dropped some hints that there might be some new Hermano stuff coming. So how did that happen?
Heard that.
News to me.
I know. I was like, God, I better write some songs. No idea. The reissue. So first, like, Hermano has never broken up. We're all great, great friends. We talk all the time. Musically, we're all very busy and doing other things. And what we try to do is only do what we want to do. And we kind of said that from day one with Hermano. Like, we're not going to be a band that's going to try to, like, that's going to be our life. You know, we're not going to put pressure on it, because we know that breaks bands. And for us, it's about the friendship and the music. All the other stuff, like when you're talking about people liking it, I honestly didn't know until I was listening to your podcast that people liked it, like the remix, because I don't pay attention to any of that stuff. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, because I liked it. I thought it was super cool. So I think how it all came about is we've been writing, we keep playing, and we've made a couple times where we get together, we hang out, and we'll track. We tracked about 10 songs a few years ago, and we're like, eh, we're not really feeling that. So we put that on pause. And as we started talking to Todd, he reached out, and I'm very, and I don't mean to sound like a jerk, but I'm very skeptical to people in the industry. Only because music is so personal to me. I mean, guitar tone is so personal to me. I literally will walk out of a show and my wife will be like, oh my God, you're killing me. And I'll be like, oh, can't do it. Can't do it. It's horrible. I'm not going to listen to that for the next 30 minutes. So I'm kind of a snob. I don't mean to be, because I want to support everybody I possibly can, but I just kind of in my own bubble. So when Todd first reached out, you know, we all met with him, and we're like, oh, we're interested. That would be cool, you know. We always own our own music. I would advise every band to always do that. I've always done that from day one, and I think it's really important. So we were in a place that we could do something. And then when, you know, we asked if David Barrett could be involved, you know, in the project. And Todd, as you guys know, he's just like the coolest dude. He's a music fan, and he has a knowledge of bands that, like, completely blows me away, you know. And then I have to remember at times, like, he's a doctor. Like, wait, he's not a nerd sitting in his studio all day, like, ah, I'm gonna get into this. So it's like this, I love his heart. I think that's what, for all of us, we were like, okay, this is a good dude. It would be fun to put these out again. And you know, kind of see if we could do something different with it without bastardizing them in the process. We also have always wanted to have redo a few things on, dare I say, like, Mike had left the band. He was in a band called Earshot for a bit. He gets mad at me because I call him Tool Junior, but a Warner Brother band, you know. And I was like, yeah, they didn't like me on a hangout with their singer. I was like, hey. Mike's awesome, but he was really busy doing that, so he wasn't able to be part of that. And to me, Hermano is the two of us playing. Like, I miss him on that record. So we asked Todd, like, do you mind if we lay down some other guitars and maybe fix some drums? And Todd's like, dude, you can do whatever you want. Like, he's just so supportive of everything. And kind of like he mentioned, we've all got, you know, Pro Tool rigs, high-end mics, like, over the years. You know, we're old as dirt, so we've been able to collect some really cool stuff, and we can just do it at home and not have to rely on other people as far as tracking goes, you know. So with that offer, we were all in. And then I had a song idea that a friend of mine who was on the second Luna Soul album, David Burke, he and I had come up with this riff. He had popped off this riff just kind of warming up his guitar, and I was like, play that again. And then I recorded it and took it home and just turned it into a song that night and sent it to him. And it wasn't, Luna Soul wasn't in a place at that point with that lineup where it really made sense. And so I called Johnny, and it was just like, hey, whenever we do an Hermano, you know, session, it's like there's a lot of pressure, even though we try not to do that, right? Because we're all like, it's got to be great. It's got, you know, what are we going to do with it? And we've kind of forgotten that early. Only a suggestion session where we showed up and we just met each other and we're throwing snowballs at John's head because he hadn't really been around snow as much as us, you know. Like, we're just 15-year-olds again. Like, that's not that we're 15, we've made that, but that's how we feel. So some of the new stuff that Todd's talking about and his allowing us to do that came out of that same love. So I called Johnny. I was like, let's not tell Mike, Chris, and Dandy that it's for Hermano, but I wrote this song and let's all track it. They'll think it's for Luna Soul. You come to my house, we'll do vocals. And so we did that, and nobody except for Todd and John knew that it was actually an Hermano song because I called Todd and said, this is happening. And then the night we tracked it, I took some pictures of John with, again, being 15, having phallic images all over his face, and sent it to the band. It was like, this is Hermano. This is for us. Like, and we were both sitting there to see how they responded, and everybody freaked out. It was like, oh, that's so cool. So that song's going to come out there very soon. There's also a song that was recorded during the Only Suggestion recordings, which we all loved. It's called Never Boulevard. That other song's called Breathe. And then there's a song called Never Boulevard. That's an acoustic song, but it never felt completed. And so when we were going through the ADATs that were literally in my crawl space for that record, Todd's like, where are the tapes for that? I was like, I think in a Tupperware in my crawl space. So they were, and we went down and got those. We'd rediscovered that track. We were like, oh, dude, let's finish it. So Chris Leathers popped off some really cool like percussion stuff in Atlanta. I added some Ebow and some solo stuff. Mike put a little something on there, and we just finally finished that song. So that's coming out too. So, and that one's got me super excited too, because it's 1998 and then also was finished in 2023, you know? And I think stuff like that's really cool with art and music.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Do you want me to keep going?
No, Turbo. I was waiting to let Turbo ask a question because I had, I've dominated as well. So
don't
Turbo.
have any more questions. I'm glad to hear that you're doing Luna Soul because I love those two albums. I'm glad to hear that you're continuing on and you have new stuff coming out, or is that a rumor, or?
Yeah, so over COVID, we kind of dissolved the last lineup. I created Luna Soul just so I could have fun again, right? It's like I'm in Denver, I moved here, I'm gonna find other people to play with, I'm gonna have fun. And throughout the writing process, as I started to think about it for a third album, I was like, man, I miss being in a band with John McGee and David Barrick and being 10 years old and listening to Triumph and Mahogany Rush and all those Mountain and all these bands. And it was just like, I'm putting together a three piece. I don't want to sing, and we'll get a singer eventually, but we're just gonna write like jam riffs. And we brought a couple singers in who are really great people, really great singers, but it just never felt right. And eventually the two guys that are brought in, Zeth and Doug, who are freaking monster players, Zeth's the drummer and Doug's the bass player. They just kept saying, dude, just sing, just sing. And I was like, I haven't wanted to sing since I was 10. I had to sing when I was 10 because at the time I was playing bass and Geddy Lee sang. So John and David Barrick are like, you're singing, dude. So yeah, I kind of took that vibe. We were using a different name, Wolfhound, around. And then as Todd and I were talking, he was like, dude, I want to put, I was like, would you be interested in doing a record? I'm thinking about doing it. He was like, I'm all in. And then I was like, well, maybe we call it Luna Soul because it is Luna Soul. I just didn't want to offend other people, as I was trying to craft stuff. And he's like, whatever you want, dude. That's Todd's response to everything. Whatever you want. So Todd's actually did get involved, and it was interesting to hear his interview with you because I was sending him stuff, and it was really cool. He was like, I love this process of hearing like your ideas, then the initial tracks, and then mixes, and then master. He's like, it's really interesting from an outsider to get to be part of that. We all take it for granted as musicians, So that was cool. Yeah, it's really raw. It's badass. I love this record. I've included my family, all the way down to my grandkids who are freaking hilarious.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is. I'm most proud of this record than I have been in a long time making music. So I really
Right.
appreciate you being kind about the first two albums too. Again, I never know if anybody's into what I'm doing, so it's always nice to hear. So thank you.
I think we need some represses of those on vinyl too, those first two ones on vinyl. I think
I've got like 300 in the crawl space by those tapes. No, I'm just kidding.
I was about to say, let me give you my address because I can get rid of those for you very quickly.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
It's
cool.
The thing about Luna Soul that and Turbo was introduced me to that band, and I was listening before, and I feel like I'm hearing some of the more modern influences that you might like. Like I was listening to the song "Sometimes We Get It Right."
Yeah, and I love that song.
All I heard one of my favorite albums of all time, which is "Master of the Reality," the first "Master of the Reality" record.
Please,
and
so good.
I right? heard that like a little bit of that vibe going. I'm like, yep, this is definitely my thing. I need to understand what's going on. But also on like Blood Moon, I heard a little bit of Alice in Chains vibes. I heard like a Queens of Stone Age vibe, or you had a heavy blues vibe going on. So all heavy, but like kind of all over the place. And is that in a good way, all over the place? But is that kind of what you go for with Luna Soul, or is there like a specific direction that you've tried to hit?
No, as you can tell by my responses, I'm very to the point and focused on everything. No, I'm just kidding. So yeah, music kind of comes out as this is who I am, and that's what I do. So I want to smile or grit my teeth. Like that's what I look for in a song. I don't like to put boundaries on myself at all. I just want to have fun, honestly. I think life is so short. The Luna Soul album is called Vita Mors, which is life and death in Italian. I think I'm from Kentucky. That's what somebody told me. So I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. I like it. I've had a lot of things going on from cancer myself and losing parents and, you know, grandchildren being born, like all these cycle of life. So for me, like anytime things are going on, that rubs off in your music, you know? And I'm also pretty transparent and to the point. So sometimes we get it right. Literally is like, I had gone to see Joe Bonamassa at Red Rocks and came home and was like, I can do that because again, I have an ego. I've got a big ego. And so I was like, oh, whatever. So I went in the room and had a couple beers and wrote the riff. And then the band, that lineup came over the next night and I was like, hey, let's try this. But I think like where I'm from, everybody jams in Kentucky. I'm noticing not everybody jams as I get older and go into different scenes. And some people need it to be, they want time to rehearse it, you know? And I'm like, oh, hell no, man, just pick up your guitar and say, drop D. It's not that, you know, it's like, to me, it's like what my friends grew up with. You just take, go along for the ride. So for that song, it was really clunky and not coming together. And when we hit the chorus with the big chords, everybody came in. So I just said, sometimes we get it right. And I was like, well, there's the chorus. We'll use that. Like, that's it. So I think stuff like that's kind of fun in creating music, you know, and I'm sure that album has some Masters vibes to it because David Prossy, who helped me make both those records, another amazing person, amazing engineer and producer and friend. He's out of Atlanta and we've known each other for years. He was like, what are we going to use as a reference? And I pulled out the first Masters album, was like, this one. My son grew up, he didn't know it. His gaming name was Masters of Reality because I had a Sunrise on the Suffer bus poster above his bed as a kid. He never knew that. But, you know, Chris Goss actually produced Black Cat Bone. We were at Sound City with him for 3 weeks. So we made a record that was eventually released like independent, but you guys shoot me your address. I'm happy to send you one. It's a cool record.
Oh yeah.
That'd be awesome. I'll definitely. Cause I had trouble. I don't even know. Is that streaming anywhere? I'm not even sure I could find it online to listen to. Know. So that would be awesome.
I looked at that album cover. I'm like, I remember this in a way, you know, that album cover seems familiar, but I couldn't recall musically if I've ever heard it.
Yeah. It's you're talking about the Black Cat Bone album.
Yeah. The Black Cat Bone.
Real. Yeah. Yeah, it's we almost released that through Joe's label Grooveyard, and then we were like, we'll just put it out ourselves. And there's some weird drama that goes on between the three of us as people, so I tend to just not get involved in that. I'm like, I'm good. I'll stay over here. But yeah, I'll send you guys. I've got a whole box of them in the basement, in the crawl space. So
That's
shoot me.
amazing. We will definitely take you up on that for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Go ahead, Turbo.
Well, I was going to say, are we running out of time here?
I think we have a little bit. If Dave, if you have a few more minutes, I think we can go another 10 and still make our half hour show an hour, which is what we tend. Every one of our shows is called half hour. All of our shows have been an hour. So
I saw that. Yeah, I loved it. Made me so happy. Hey, but that's what music does, right? Like,
right.
And we're all, you obviously love it as much as I do, you know, like music. And I hear that in your questions and on the other interviews, and it's super cool.
Now, mine was going to be once again, I'm trying to put together the heavy Christmas album.
Yeah.
I'm in. I love that idea.
Yeah, because the whole idea of every year, that's just the same old thing. It's like, I'd like to hear some of these songs just heavier, you know? Just
I'm totally down. I was actually going to do a Christmas, all Christmas tune set last year, and I couldn't get it worked out with my travel because I work a lot, and I was just like, damn it. I thought that'd be fun to show up, and people think you're going to play like your normal songs, and all you do is like 10 Christmas songs.
Terrible. You're three for three on this. You're three for three. We have a label who's ready to put it out. Tony Reed is in. You know, Dave's in. So, you know, this is coming together for sure. I was going to ask you about just back to the Hermano repress we got from Ripple. One of the big teases that Todd did before it actually came out was, I'm working with a legend guitar player who's going to be involved in a repress. Now, he wasn't talking about you in this case, though he could have been, but he mentioned...
I doubt that,
he mentioned Ty Tabor. And did you get a chance to interact with or meet or talk to Ty? Because he's one of my all-time favorite musicians. And to combine, I never saw like Hermano and King's X like ever in a way coming together in my life. And I saw that and I'm like, I don't know how it happened, but bring it on. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so Chris Leathers and I, the drummer from Hermano, he was also in Superfuzz with me. We've been friends since we were probably, he was 13, I was 16. We love King's X. I mean, like stupid crazy about that band.
Yep.
So when I was talking to David Barrick about the, you know, possibly redoing Only a Suggestion, he goes, you know, you're not going to believe this because David loves him too. He goes, do you know who's mastering a lot of my stuff? And I'm like, no. I figured it's going to be one of the Nashville guys because David's still in Glasgow, which is not far from Nashville. And he's like, Ty Tabor. And I was like, are you shitting me? Like, immediately was like, do you think he would be into doing our stuff? And David's like, I think so. He's like, let me shoot him a text. And that night I was sitting with my wife having a drink out at our fire pit. And he's like, Ty's in, loves Hermano. And I was just like, I mean, literally, I've met a lot of great people. I'm sure you guys have as well. And I'm friends with a lot of great people that are, you know, have names and whatnot. But that blew me away. I was just like, that's otherworldly to me, man. Like, what? King's X is going to be involved. First of all, they know who we are. Maybe he's lying, but I'm still going to take it at that. And two, you know, like I was so pleased. So, I mean, I can't say like we hang out. It's all through emails and stuff, but he is such a gentleman. He's so kind. He's one of my favorite players. When my dad was very ill, my dad and I both were going through cancer at the same time, and I ended up okay from it. He didn't. I was reading the King's X book. And that's when all of this kind of all came together too. So that was super bizarre timing in my life, you know? So no, I would love to hang out with Ty Tabor. I usually don't care in those environments. I would freak out. I'd just be like, oh, I would probably be speechless, which you can see would be an anomaly for me.
I get it. Favorite King's X album? Since you're a King's X guy.
I still love Gretchen. Yeah. There's just a rawness to that. Although I will say, as a song, and I know it was the hit, but anytime, because of what it was written about, I love writing songs. I'm a songwriter. So that Over My Head, I'm like,
oh yeah,
just knowing that's about his grandmother, like singing her prayers, like, dude, that I'm from the South, man, Southern Baptist, You know, the coolest thing is to go to a Southern Baptist church and listen to the band and the choir. Like, it'll blow your mind. So, like, I was really into that. I wasn't necessarily into the religious piece of it, but just the musical elements of it's so cool. Yeah, so I can't say anything obscure or cool. I'm totally not a cool person, but that's my honest answer. I love that first, you know, that record is just really raw sounding to me.
Right. Probably one
Excellent
of my
choice.
favorites. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask, what are y'all's things next?
Turbo.
Oh, Gretchen, like you said, was probably the first one that hooked me. What's the fourth one?
The self Dogman? I'm doing it in my
Dogman.
head. Dogman. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
That was one that I think I got the most into.
yeah, that slipped my brain. The only thing I have on Discogs and I share with my wife is Find Dog Man on vinyl.
Oh,
She's
same.
like,
It's one of
hell
my
no.
two
It's like
missing ones.
300.
Yes.
Yeah, she's like $360. I'm like, that's a deal. Let's buy
Yeah, Dogman is great. I went through like had to be probably like 99, 2000, where like King's X had like this email like club, and we would email back and forth with each other. I got really into it. So one of my favorite bands of all time. I go back and forth on my favorite, but I love Ear Candy because I love the
I was going to
Beatles
say Ear Candy.
harmonies and just the
Yep.
complexity of that record. I also love Please Come Home, Mr. Bulbous, which a lot of people don't love,
Yeah.
but it's just so weird. And the band was just like, you know what? I'm just gonna do whatever the hell we want here. I don't really care. We're on our own now. It's like we're just
Yeah.
making the music we want to. And some of the songs on that, like, I don't know if it was the time of my life when I got it or what it was, but like that album just sticks with me. But there's nothing bad in that discography. There's nothing that they do that's bad. So yeah, I wanted to, knowing there was a Hermano King's X connection, I'm glad that it that you have the same love that we do. Cool. What else? What else, Dave? What else do you want to leave everybody
I have
here? Oh, Turbo, go. Something else.
one quick question.
Yeah, man.
Does anybody sing Motherfucker better than John?
No, no. Johnny is one of my best friends in the world, and we've seen each other at all shapes and sizes and moments and forms. I'll tell you, man, when I wrote that, and I was just like, yeah, he's gonna kill it. But there was a moment in Germany years ago. I want to say we were in Frankfurt, the small club. We were like still in a sprinter at this point, the first tour. And Chris and I used to do Livewire, AC/DC, you know.
Yeah, there you go, Turbo.
Yeah, and I used to be able to sing, not like Bon Scott, but I could sing AC/DC and get away with it. And it was always fun. Like, we did that in Superfuzz. So we just popped it off as a joke. And freaking John stepped up, and then we never talked about AC/DC's Big Doors, you know, and he's into Black Pumas, like really cool music, obscure, but not obscure, but just wide variety. And he started singing, and I almost shit my pants. Like, no doubt, I was just like, okay, well, you got Bon Scott, you got John Garcia. Like, I'm friends with one of them, I'll take it. Like, that guy is such a good person, but the way he sings, it is. It just pulls me in. There's something that grabs me by my heart, and it's just like, I want to hear more of that. Like, I believe what you're saying. But you
Yeah.
gotta know, he is one of the coolest, kindest, most down-to-earth people I've ever met in my life.
That's awesome.
Good, good dude. Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story from Johnny taught me early on with Hermano. Superfuzz was dying for any tour. I remember when we were signed and all this stuff going on, and they're like, you know, we're talking about a Pearl Jam tour. You like this, a Pearl Jam, and they're trying to get you on Smashing Pumpkins and, you know, 11. And I was like, how about King's X? Can we get on King's X? And they're like, no, you don't want to do that. But I was like, all right, I do. But with their mono, we had this big tour lining up with some massive bands, and we were going to headline. And we had just come back from our first tour, and a lot of things were starting to roll quickly for Hermano, which was nice. And I'll never forget, I was in my home in Georgia. I lived down there for a while, and I called John. My kids were little, and I was just like, hey, you know, hey, this tour is lining up. And he's like, oh, okay. And I was like, we have to do it. And he calls me Davey. He's like, Davey, let me tell you something. We don't have to do shit. And I was like, oh, it was like this freeing moment as a musician that's trying to get gigs. I was like, oh, we don't, because we have your voice. Yes, that's right. See, when you have my voice, you got to go out and clean the stables. But yeah. It was a cool moment. Like, and again, shows the friendship. And, Johnny's just like, we do what we want to do. And we've always done that. So it's cool. Like, we're releasing this stuff and I'm getting to meet you and hear what you're doing. And, you know, and the whole scene, like the Ripple family and the scene that's around Ripple, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It was so cool to see everybody that loves music that way, you know? So, yeah. I mean, that's where I would end, you know, my thoughts on all of this is just thank you to everybody for, you know, as we're getting older and becoming grandparents and living our lives and going through these different chapters, like there's something still about hearing, you know, a good Sabbath riff or a new band you've never heard of that actually plays. And I go, oh, that's the future. You know, there's the next generations coming up. We all feel that way. And it's cool to kind of unite as an underground scene and support each other. So I can't thank you all enough for everything you're doing for the whole scene. It's very cool.
Thank you. Yeah. And we thank you and just want to plug, I know any dates you can drop or ideas of when the new Lunar Soul or the new, title Kill Us if we drop it too soon, but when any of the new Hermano stuff is dropping, anything you want to plug here or let us know?
I think Todd said it's all coming out next Tuesday, so that everything will be out next Tuesday. No, I'm just kidding. It'll be they're both scheduled like late summer, fall, around there. They'll be this year for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely be looking forward to that.
Yeah, and
I hope you all dig it. Let's talk again afterwards. Let me know, like shoot me an email, let me know if you dig it.
Yeah, I was gonna say definitely. When a couple weeks before it drops, let's have you back on and do a little bit of promotion on it, go through it. I'm sure we'll have it a little bit ahead of time so we can talk about it and get it out there. I think one of the things you said about the scene, like, you know, Twitter is a cesspool, but when you use the mute button enough and you just follow the people who matter, it's a pretty crazy united scene. It reminds me, you know, I grew up in like the hardcore and punk scene, like the early 90s, yeah. And like when labels mattered and when, you know, you'd buy anything that came out in a certain label and it didn't matter. And there was like this unity. I see a lot of that now, which is very, very cool. Like, you know, we'll buy anything that comes out on Small Stone or on Ripple or.
Yeah. Small Stone's a great label. Yeah.
You know, that's what, you know, that's the kind of love and the kind of scene that I'm excited to see and why I'm even bothering doing any of this stuff. Cause it's so cool. And I got to meet people like Turbo too. So never would have.
Yeah. I love that you guys connected and have this thing going to support everybody. It's cool, man. You know, music definitely pulls us all together. It untangles knots and connects people and humans. And I think that's really cool, man. Across the globe. How badass is that?
Well, that's excellent.
You. Yeah.
That's what it is.
It is. Agreed.
Music and chocolate.
Yeah. hell yeah.
All right. Well, hey, it's such a pleasure to meet you,
Bill. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Great to meet you. Appreciate
we'll have
your
you
time.
Back on when the new stuff drops and get your opinion. We could talk for hours. I'm looking forward to the next session we have.
Oh, man. That would mean so much to me. Thank you so much. All right.
Thanks, Dave.
All right. Bye. Bye, guys. Cheers.
All right. That was a pretty awesome interview with Dave Angstrom. Can't wait to have him back on. Drop some really cool hints about what's coming. The fact that Hermano never broke up and some of those John Garcia stories, super cool. Awesome. Well, that's our show for this week. Thank you for listening. Again, you can find me at Fuzz Doom Rip on X, Musepedia Immediate Metal, writing some reviews and as a Doom Charts contributor. And take us home, Turbo.
Yeah, thank you for listening. And you can find me somewhere if you look for me. Just keep it heavy and keep it loud. Till next time.
Thanks, everybody.